Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi everyone, you're listening to the Third Coast podcast. I'm Dennis Funk. If you're like me and don't like wearing big, bulky, over-the-ear headphones when you listen to podcasts, or if you just live somewhere a bit chilly, then you might want to keep your ears warm with one of our Pidgey-themed knit caps. You know, you lose a lot of heat from your head, and it's tough to pay attention to stories when you're shivering with cold. So to have a look at our hats and all of the other Third Coast goodies in our shop, visit our website, thirdcoastfestival.org. While you're there, you can listen to audio from the 2014 Third Coast Conference. For budding radio nerds, check out Sound Design 101 from Brendan Baker and Caitlin Prest. Or if you want to know how to get a story on a show you love, there are two different sessions on The Art of the Pitch. But if you're thinking about starting your own podcast, then you should definitely listen to the Own Your Thing sessions. There's hours upon hours of conference listening for you to learn from and enjoy, but it's only at thirdcoastfestival.org. All right, that's it from me. Now here's a brand new resound, and I'm extra excited because it's officially our 200th episode. Enjoy.
Where's your father?
Where's your father?
From the Third Coast International Audio Festival in Chicago, I'm Gwen Maxey, and this is Resound.
His son goes to the bathroom and returns. His dad had vanished.
The father of two mysteriously disappeared.
Their dad is missing.
And he seems to have simply vanished without a trace.
Great radio is everywhere, but you can't be, which is why we collect, curate, and scour to bring you the best audio stories available worldwide. On the air, the internet, podcasts, of course, we listen to everything we can get our ears on and then bring you the best of what we hear each week on Resound.
These boys greet their dad as though they are genuinely glad to see him, as though they had really missed being away from him.
For many of us growing up, our dad is just, you know, our dad. The guy who takes care of things and tells you to clean your room. Maybe he lets you swing from his bicep or teaches you how to make mustacholi. He's just, you know, dad. Then one day, when you're a little older, you realize that your dad is, in fact, an actual person with dreams, regrets, successes, and failings. In short, someone not unlike yourself. He may even be an interesting person you would like to actually get to know. Today on Resound, we bring you two stories of dads who are, for one reason or another, starting to slip away, and the sons who are desperately trying to stay connected. Stay with us. Journalist Greg O'Brien is in a very difficult but unique position. Diagnosed with early Alzheimer's, his memory is faulty. But while part of him is inevitably slipping, another part of him, the reporter, has gone into serious overdrive to try and understand and document what's been going on inside his head since his late 50s. Producer Leah Tao tells his story in Mind Shaft.
Driving home from Boston, had a meeting. I do a lot of work in Boston, to Cape Cod, and I didn't know where I was.
That's a road Greg has driven so many times, he says he could do it blindfolded.
I had no freaking clue. It wasn't until close to 2 o'clock in the morning I realized where I was. I was outside Providence, Rhode Island, about an hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours from Cape Cod, in the total wrong direction. And I had just kept driving.
Even now at 64, Greg is so athletic and handsome that he seems like the embodiment of health. He has the toned legs of a runner, and he has so few wrinkles it could make a much younger man jealous. And his silver mane only adds, you know, an air of distinction to his already considerable charms. But not all is well with Greg.
I don't trust my head anymore. It used to be my best friend, and I don't see a chance for reconciliation now.
Greg has been a writer and thinker all his life, and he's extremely eloquent with a knack for the poetic. It's hard to grasp that a man who can express himself so beautifully is the same man who minutes later will demonstrate why he no longer trusts his brain as he goes to give me a copy of the book he recently published and sign it for me.
I got a book for you, so...
Oh, really?
Let me do that before I forget.
Okay.
Forgetting a lot these days. There you go. All
right, thank you. Oh, thank you.
All right. So, you know, I can't spell names and I'm freaking embarrassed about it. So I have to, and I invert letters. So just spell your name for me.
Okay. L. E.
E.
A.
A.
That's it.
All right. What is the, I forget the date.
It's the 19th, I
okay.
think.
Okay. What day of the week it is?
Friday.
Friday. Okay. Let's see. Keep the faith. Walk in hope. Don't forget me.
Greg knows that he will forget me, that my visit and our entire interview will fade from his memory, perhaps within hours after we're done. But he's fighting tooth and nail to tell his story while he still can. So he wrote a book about his struggle with early onset Alzheimer's. I'm a reporter, he says. Embedded inside the mind of Alzheimer's. And it's that dual perspective that drew me to Greg and his story. He's the victim of a darkness that is gaining terrain on him every day. And at the same time, he's an astute observer of his own decline, and he's able to describe it with precision and poetry. It's confusing when you meet him because the gap between what the writer and observer is capable of and what the man himself cannot manage at times is so wide.
There was a time when I was in the office and I had my laptop and a cup of coffee, and I knew I had to go into the house and I had to microwave my coffee and I had to print something out of my laptop. Well, my brain told me that you put the laptop in the microwave and you connect the printer to the coffee cup.
Greg went so far as to put the laptop inside the microwave, but he realized his mistake just before he had started and fried his computer. In other moments, he hasn't caught himself in time.
I've had to label the toothpaste and the mouthwash because I've grabbed for the wrong things. And, you know, there was one time where I gargled with rubbing alcohol. It says rubbing alcohol, but my brain said it was mouthwash, and I wouldn't recommend that for anyone.
Sometimes Greg gets utterly frustrated with himself when he forgets how to operate the most ordinary things.
What the fuck? It's a phone, dumbass. You don't know how to use it? No, I don't. My mind is... And then you get so damn angry that you hurl it across the room, you know, which I did right into the sink.
So how is it possible that in one moment, Greg is gargling with rubbing alcohol, and the next, he's writing a 200-page book and talking to you like any other smart person you know. He describes his clicking in and out like this.
If you think of yourself in your living room and you're very excited to sit down at night and read a great book, and the light starts to blink. It's a loose plug in a socket. And you get up and you push the plug back in, and then it starts to blink again. Then the plug becomes so loose, it falls out, and you put the plug back in. Finally, the plug is so loose, you can't put it back in the socket, and the light goes dead.
Greg had a terrifyingly clear idea of the path he was on as soon as he got his diagnosis, because he'd watched his mother die of Alzheimer's.
And it was like watching someone holding on a dock on an outgoing tide who just let go, and I watched her drift. It is a death in slow motion. It is a race that I won't win. but I refuse to stop running because I don't know what else to do.
Greg literally runs several miles every day, but he's recently had to switch from running on the road to the treadmill for fear that he'll get lost. He runs in the evening, which is when the socket in his mind gets the most loose, almost as if the darkness of dusk infests his brain, and he fights to stay plugged in by increasing blood flow through exercise. Seeing him run is like watching him try to outpace the disease in the most literal way. But the race is on in other ways too, against time, which is not on his side, towards trying to report and share as much as he can before the plug falls out for good, and also to keep making money before he can no longer provide for his wife and the three kids that they recently finished putting through college.
The thing is, I stop working, this family falls apart. I have $200,000 in college debt. I got to find a way to figure it out. And can I do what I did before? No. But all my clients, many of my clients I've had for 15, 20 years, they're all standing behind me. And they're all giving me work, knowing what I can do and what I can't do. So that's pretty cool. They could have walked away and they didn't. And that says something for them.
The O'Briens live on a beautiful property surrounded by trees in Brewster on Cape Cod. And they know they'll lose the house where they raised their kids when Greg can no longer earn a living. So he works 40 hours a week at his consulting job, plus many long hours promoting his book, giving talks, giving interviews to people like me. And it's a constant balancing act.
While you're doing that, I'm just seeing if anyone is trying to get a hold of me. I have to check my email at all times.
I didn't realize you still worked full-time in addition to being a book writer. I mean, that would be challenging for most people.
Well, Sure.
I'll totally let you do that.
Greg's schedule would be exhausting for anyone. And the question is, how does he do it? First of all, practically, how does he type emails, not to mention write a book, when he was just struggling to find the three letters in my first name?
If you said, Greg, where's H? Right now, I'm thinking, I don't know what finger I'd tell you I'd hit. But if my hands are on that keyboard, I know. And I can't explain that. But it's working for me. There's a motor thing that goes on, I guess. They call it muscle memory.
Greg also has the help of his youngest son, Connor, who at 26 has moved home to support his dad. He drives him around because Greg is no longer allowed to drive. And he travels with him to his appearances, helps him navigate crowds, which tend to overwhelm Greg, and he handles many day-to-day things for his dad. But Connor admits that it's not always easy.
I'll hear him go in a rage and scream to himself, and I'll come out to the office and say, Dad, what's wrong? And he says, nothing. I'm fine. And he just brushes me off. Well, Dad, you just cursed and screamed at yourself, so everything's not okay. Why don't you tell me what's wrong? And he won't. And that frustrates me. I remember asking him, his phone was cracked. And I said, Dad, what happened? He said, oh, I dropped it. And then I find out that it was because he didn't know how to dial the phone and threw it against the wall. So that's like the type of thing that I'm talking about. He doesn't open up to me enough to tell me stories like that. So I have to find it out either through the book or through his speeches, which drives me crazy. But that's the fight in him. That's what makes him really strong and... What am I going to do?
I asked Connor if he told his dad how it frustrates him, and he said, yeah, but it's just who my dad is. And then I asked Greg why he wasn't more open about his struggles.
I hate pity, and, you know, as a typical Irish ass male, and I know it's a cliche, but never let him see you sweat. Never let him see you sweat.
Why? You know what Connor said?
What?
He said, I wish that he would tell me more what goes on inside of him. Why not be more open? You're open with strangers. You're open in your book. You're open with the world in telling your story. Why hold back with your family?
Alzheimer's is like a mine that's 5 miles deep. I'm only comfortable taking people 3 miles down. The rest is just dark and scary, so I don't go deeper into the mine shaft with them. I don't want to do that to them.
I asked Greg if he would take me into some of the dark things he goes through.
I woke up, I'm wide awake, and I noticed a bird had gotten in. So I'm trying to figure out, how am I going to get this bird out? And then I noticed the bird going around in circles, around in circles, around in circles, tighter, tighter circles. And then it dive bombed to my heart, hit my chest. And then I realized it wasn't real.
Hallucinations like that are common for people with Alzheimer's and are almost always scary.
It could be 9 o'clock in the morning, and there's like a platoon of spiders walking across the ceiling. At times, some of them can have blood on them, and then they float, and then they start coming toward me.
Some of Greg's struggles are not imaginary, but far too real.
There'll be times when, and this is embarrassing to say, but I can be speaking with people or solving a problem, and while I'm doing that, I've lost continence. The one particular time in Boston, I was very upset because I'm a writer, but also a communication consultant and just dealing with some law firm in Boston on some issues. Beautiful, overlooking Boston Harbor, and not the kind of place where you want to lose your control of yourself.
I began to understand why Greg had a desire to shield his family from some of the more disturbing things about the disease. It wasn't just macho bravado, it seemed to me, but also a genuine desire not to alarm them, you know, to spare them some of the pain by suffering in silence. And Greg did emphasize how glad he was to have Connor around all the time, how nice it was when his son came out to check if he was okay, even when Greg was embarrassed and brushed him off. I felt for both of them. Many people consider dementia one of the worst ways to go. We'd rather die of a heart attack and be gone in a flash than put ourselves and our families through the gradual, painful, embarrassing ordeal of losing our minds. But Greg says there are some advantages to knowing that you're on your way out before you're fully gone.
When you strip yourself naked and you stand in front of a mirror and you see things in your life that you don't like, but now you have the opportunity at least to try to fix them or fix some of them.
Like what? What are the things that you want to fix?
Well, you know, in my own judgment, I'm about as imperfect as a human being there can be. I probably committed every sin in life other than the major, major ones. I've become more open to other individuals, whereas before, I was just focused on me, kind of. You know, I'd pretend that that really wasn't the case, but I was, you know, just this selfish guy in a lot of ways that was chasing the brass ring, in this case, in my career, in newspapering or journalism, and that was kind of masking some of the things I needed to fix in my life in terms of being a better person, a better father, a better husband. And I can't turn the clock back, nor can I become perfect, but I can try harder, so I'm trying harder now.
There are three O'Brien kids, no grandkids yet. There's the oldest boy, Brendan, who's 30, a middle daughter, Colleen, who just got married, and of course, Connor, the youngest kid, who's living at home to help his dad.
I think he opens up more to Brendan, my older brother, than to me. Far more, actually. So,
why do you think you're the baby? that might
be true.
It doesn't seem quite fair, considering that you're the one spending all this time with him.
No, it's fine. No, it's good. We've had a lot of good talks. You know, we're on the road a lot, and I really enjoy it, and I think he does too. And it's good. I'm really happy. I'm really enjoying spending this time with him. So, you know, it's brought our whole family closer, and it's brought me and my dad closer. I've never been with him this much in years. And I really enjoy it.
So there is a silver lining in this gradual decline, a chance that victims of heart attack or lightning strike don't have. to right some wrongs and maximize the time together. But the O'Briens know that the sand is pouring through the hourglass at a terrifying pace.
He had a speech in New York last week, and he told another story that I didn't know about. He was at a Dunkin' Donuts, and my mom came in, and my dad didn't recognize her. And that scares the crap out of me.
I was there writing, and my wife showed up. I didn't know who she was. She's a very beautiful woman, so I'm attracted to beautiful women. So bad dog that I am right away, I look at a beautiful, I'm shallow, but I'm a shallow guy, shallow Irishman. And I said, well, this is a person of interest. I kind of know her. And I'm saying, okay, who is it? And I'm trying to go through the files of my freaking brain. And, you know, the Rolodex, flip, 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 looking for the name, flip, 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 flip. Oh, okay, it's Mary Catherine.
Also known as my wife.
My wife, yeah.
When the identity of someone standing right in front of him continues to escape Greg, he says he uses his training as a reporter to find the missing information.
When I was a young reporter, investigative reporter at the Arizona Republic in Phoenix, my first assignment was covering the court beat, Maricopa County Superior Court. And I didn't know anything about the courts. It was a woman judge, and I was covering her court. And it was Sandra Day O'Connor. She broke me in on court reporting, and she would always tell me as a reporter, Greg, keep asking questions. Keep asking questions until you get the answers. And I use that in my life today.
Greg's investigative technique is so good that he can usually figure out who the other person is without giving away that he didn't know. But he admits that it's exhausting to live this way.
It's a 24/7 fight, Leah. Strategies for getting lost in familiar places, not understanding people, strategies for hallucinations, strategies for not understanding distances anymore. You lose your filter, you know, you become more childlike. You're more given to potty talk. It's actually kind of fun, but I have to watch myself.
Your priest would not be happy?
No, I know, would not be. So I have to watch myself there. You can't give up. You are freaking exhausted, but you can never leave the fight, because if you do, you're drifting. I'm sorry, there are days when I'm tired of fighting. I just am. This fucking sucks. There are times I go out in my boat on Pleasant Bay and think maybe I'm not going to come back. I choose not to come back. And then right now I realize that I have to, and I do. Because I feel there's more for me to do. It's not the time. And there's more for me to do as a husband and father and whatever else purpose I'm supposed to have. But if I lose my writing, that's the essence of who I am. And I'm scared shitless about that. I'm really scared about the day I wake up and I can't, the keyboard isn't moving for me. That may be the day I go back on my boat, even though I know I'm not supposed to, and not come back.
Are you afraid to die?
No. You know, it's not my place to proselytize, but I have a deep faith. I believe I'm going to a better place. You know, I also have prostate cancer, and I've made the decision not to treat it. And I've talked to my family about it because I don't want them to see me in a nursing home in the final stages of Alzheimer's. So that's my exit strategy.
At this point, Greg's oldest son, Brendan, had driven down from Boston with his girlfriend to see his dad.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey,
how you
good to see you. Good.
Hey, I'm Brendan.
Hey, I'm Leah. Hey, so nice to meet you.
How are you?
Good.
How much longer do you guys have in here?
Probably a little bit, and then you want to interview Brendan?
I'm not really in the mood for it today.
Can you give her 5 minutes? Because it would be, she's trying to do a good job on this. And
all right, we came down here to come see you.
Yeah, I know. No, but
if you don't want to, it's fine.
Yeah, do fine. Yeah. Connor did.
All right, well, then if you promise me that we'll...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I promise you. When we're done here, I'm done.
Okay. All
right, okay.
All right,
okay.
All right.
I found myself trying to balance Brendan's desire not to participate with his dad's desire that he should, and I didn't know what to do. I really didn't want to take Brendan's time. But it turned out it wasn't his own time he was concerned about.
I'm trying to get him to sort of understand that he's got to kind of start to take a step back a little bit and slow down. And so that's one of the reasons that I'm kind of like, come on, Dad, like, let's take it easy, have a family night. And so,
yeah, I totally get it.
I apologize. But
No, you're looking out for him. You should be.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even know how much had been going on, but it does sound like it's been kind of insane. And probably he's enjoying it to get this attention for his book, but you also got to watch it, right?
I think he's enjoying it, but I think it's really taking a toll on him. So he hides it really well, but I think, you know, really starting to wear him down. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not like your typical book promotion where the author can just sort of just dedicate all their time to it. You know, he's still got bills to pay and he works for himself. So he's got to, you know, still has to work. And, right now, the book's, it's just sort of like a side project, but it's a 50-hour-a-week side project, and then he's working another 60 hours. You know, it's crazy, so.
And then does he get worse when he gets tired? Is that one of your concerns?
Yeah. So go for 4 or 5 days, and then it's like just a steep drop-off where he just needs to, like, go away for a while, you know, and just check out for a little while, and I think if we can get him to conserve some of the energy a little bit, it won't be as much of a pendulum of, it'll be more hopefully leveled out. But he had such a rough week.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry that he had a rough week. Is it your mom who calls you and says he's had a hard week, or can you? Figure that out?
Oh, I know. I can just, because I talk to him every day. I'm helping him with a lot of the stuff that he's doing with the book and promoting it and stuff like that. So we're in close contact, and it's apparent, you know, and he'll admit it, you know. He told me it, you know, it was last night. He's just having a bad week, and so
sucks. Sad. It sucks. I know. It sucks.
It just fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Now I'm really starting to think about, like, the actual real reality of the future, which is scary as shit. Is, you know, he'll never meet my kids. You know, he's barely gonna know my girlfriend. You know, it's like, so just. The reality of that starting to set in, which just sucks. But, so. I think that's about all I got. Is that okay?
That's okay.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, right. Totally.
Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah. Normally, like, I'm all about doing the stuff. It was just like, I travel a lot with work and it's hard. I can't get down here. So I don't know if next time I'll see him after this weekend, you know, so. It's kind of like we try to just make the most of it when we get the time. So I really just want to go sit down on a porch with him and just relax. So
I hear you.
I apologize that I'm so short.
I wanted to just get out of there and let the family get on with their Friday night. But when I told Greg about my concern, he wanted to comment on this question of pacing himself.
I can't coast. My brain is not that way. I got to rev it up. And because I find if I'm not pushing forward, Leah, and I've tried it, I'm falling backwards.
Because Greg had been so on, so eloquent, so clear, so charming during our interview, I hadn't quite understood just how much effort it had been for him.
This kicked my ass, but that's okay. It's more important that I tell the story of Alzheimer's and worry about getting my ass kicked. But this, an interview like that kicks my ass.
And this is why your son is concerned about you, Brendan. That's why he said, okay, enough soon. And they want to spend
They're trying to put walls of protection around me now.
And maybe they should.
Because they're seeing some more progression. So this week I had my doctor and three good friends saying, Greg, I'm noticing more stuff. You got to take care of yourself.
And that means slowing down?
I don't know, because if I slow down, I'm afraid to. I'm not sure. So I just yes them to death, because they don't understand. They don't understand. And that's the loneliness of Alzheimer's. So you just press on.
Mm.
Mind Shaft was produced by Leah Tao for her podcast Strangers from KCRW. For a link to Leah's podcast, plus more information on Greg and his book, visit our website, thirdcoastfestival.org. Coming up after the break, a Swedish man follows in his father's footsteps and tire tracks. Stay with us. You're listening to Resound from the Third Coast International Audio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Festival in Chicago. I'm Gwen Maxey. On today's show, stories about dads disappearing. Martin Jansson has 3 postcards from his father. They arrived in the mail at Martin's home in Sweden when he was just 16. His father, who left Martin and his siblings, went cycling around the coast of Ireland on a red Ferrari bike. As a young man, Martin decided to take those brief postcards and try and retrace his father's journey, the places he went, the people he met, to try and better understand who he was, why he disappeared, and why he's been disappearing ever since. Here is My Father Takes a Vacation.
It's the week before Christmas, and I'm standing in a public library in Stockholm, Sweden, and I'm asking the librarian for books about Ireland.
You can help me to get some books about Ireland.
Om Ireland?
Ja.
Fakta om Ireland.
Ja, precis.
I've never been there, only seen pictures of green hills and heard some folk music. I'm going there in February, so the books I'm looking for offer information.
Jag ska vara på den här avdelningen NE.
NE. Här. McCarthy's Bar. The funniest book I've ever read this year. My father, he lives in New Zealand. He's the only one I know who has done more than getting drunk in the bars of Dublin. He traveled to Ireland on a Ferrari red bike 6 years ago. I couldn't come with him. He wanted to be alone. That's why I'm traveling there now, to see what he wanted to see.
Hey, mom.
I took the subway to my friend Amanda. I brought the books I found to show her where I'm going.
A Journey of Discovery in Ireland.
By
Pete McCarthy.
And it's called McCarthy's Bar.
There you have a bar. I guess that's he, Pete. Yeah. And there you have a nun.
Yeah, and there's... is she drinking beer? She's drinking beer,
is she drinking... I have to...
Never pass a bar that has your name on it, says the 8th rule of travel. A very rewarding rule if your name is McCarthy and you're wandering through the west of Ireland. A lot of younger people say that Ireland is you two and the cranberries and
yeah, rain, the weather.
Rain and the rain.
Mm. I also have some kind of feeling that the family is quite important.
Now how come?
I don't know. I just have this feeling that... maybe that you spend more time together. I guess that people go together to church on Sundays.
I think that is a very naive view of people, don't you?
I don't know. I think it's nice. I hope it's. I hope they have strong families.
Yeah, but you know, probably how they think about us. Like, we walk around naked all the time. And we
have lots of sex.
And a lot of sex.
Isn't that true?
Hello?
Hey, the Martin.
Hey, Martin.
He's always biked a lot, my father. In Scotland, Denmark, Holland, and so on. But this was different. He made the trip 2 years after his wife, my mother, had died in cancer. He was gone for a month during the summer. I was 16, my sister 13, and my older brother 18. We spent the summer with our grandmother on an island in the Baltic Sea. I sold ice cream to tourists on the beach, trying not to think of my father. I was always kind of in love with my father, you know. I always liked to come along with him doing stuff or fix with a boat or anything. And I always had this idea that if he was alone, he would be really sad. My father has a photo album from his travels where he has listed all the places he went to.
First, we're ferry to Newcastle, where the tog to Holyhead.
First, he took the ferry to Newcastle, then the train to Holyhead. There, he took the ferry to Dublin. It says that Dublin is a town filled of garbage.
Mm, I think so.
He wasn't too fond of that city. And there is a lot of... what do you call that? Pollution? But he tells me that I should visit the University Library in Dublin to see all the handwritten books that they keep there, to get a feeling of knowledge before the discovery of printing. It's not a beautiful city, but it's alive. My father has a library himself, an entire room filled with books, almost 2 bookshelves of travelling stories. I used to love them as a child. He only cycled on small roads going through Wicklow Mountains, Glendalough and Wexford. I should visit that town, he says. And then he went to a town, he said I should visit Wexford, and they have a really big difference between the high and the low tide.
Mm-hmm.
And so it probably looked kind of beautiful, you know, and the water is gone.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what happens with the boats.
I guess they get stuck on the bottom of the sea.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a boat, it should like dip over.
Yeah, maybe it does.
Ja, det är massa små låga hus, det ligger vid vattnet och har en liten hamn med stort tidvatten.
He says that it's a town filled with small houses with 1 or 2 floors. It lies next to the ocean with a small harbour. And when it's not raining, the sun is shining. Like all places in Ireland, there is nothing in between. He then cycled on to the Hook. He says that I should go there and look at the old lighthouse.
It's
supposed to be at Waterford. I don't. This map is very big.
It sounds like a lonely place, a little lighthouse.
Wait, yeah.
What did he do there?
I think he just went to the lighthouse to see the lighthouse.
He just looked at the lighthouse.
During the month he was gone, I used to receive postcards from Ireland, picturing small towns and standardized landscapes. They said, all is well. I tore all of them apart.
gammal seglingsbeskrivning så stod det så här, kommer jag ihåg att jag skrivit upp här. To island by the hook and the crook. Det syftar på de två näs som överlappande skyddar infarten till Waterford, den gamla hamnstaden grundad av vikingarna på 800-talet.
He tells me about an old sailing description. To island by the hook or by crook, meaning the way into Waterford, the old harbor town founded by the Vikings. After that, he went out to an island called Dersey Island, which you could reach by a cable car.
In the linbana, there fick du plats en ko, eller åtta får, eller sex människor.
It could hold one cow, eight sheep, or six people. The cattle was prioritized. The island itself is only 6.5 kilometers long and had 16 inhabitants.
When he got there, it was like he was on his way back. And it's only so small, so he walked across and back. It was like his turning point, probably. Imagine living on that island.
Mm. 16 people?
Yeah, 16 people.
Imagine living there a whole life?
No, because he probably stood on the tip of the island.
And he looked at the sea.
Yeah, and he had to turn back, you know.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if he wanted to. Or if he just wanted to continue onwards, never turning back.
3 years later, he emigrated to New Zealand with his Ferrari red bike. Me, my sister and brother were left behind. My father again. I asked him what he thought about when he was on his bike there on the small roads.
Först tänker man på cyklingen, förstås, själva cyklingen. Vad som var bakom nästa krök. Sen undrade jag om det skulle regna mera idag eller det räckte med 3 regnskurar. Om det var mycket backar så tänkte jag om det blir motvind eller medvind.
I thought about what was behind the next corner, he says. If it was going to rain more or if it was enough with 3 rain showers in one day. And when it was uphill, I thought about which way the wind was coming from. After those thoughts, he thought about the loss of my mother. How unfair he believed it was.
Tänkte aldrig att det skulle varit att vi hade velat att du hade varit hemma så där.
Ja. Jag behövde lite tid borta från er också, vet du. Ja. Det var ju bara jag och ni.
I asked him if we never thought about that we needed him at home, and he answers that he needed to get away from us for a while, to be alone, to be able to continue.
I look identical to my father. I'm like a physical reincarnation of my father. If I look at pictures and see that when he's like 20, when he's 22 as I am, there's no difference at all. He's a little bit taller, but physically we're the same. No, if you picture that for yourself. Like you've been married to somebody, you've known somebody for 25 years, who dies in front of your eyes, in cancer. And you don't know how things work, like the entire world is upside down. And you decide to bike on island alone, along the coast. I mean, wonder what he found. There. Island.
Jag vet bara att jag har ett väldigt stort behov av att ha lite paus från alla vardagssysslor och vardagsansvar. Ungefär som du har haft ett jullov nu.
We all need to get away sometimes, just as you did when you had Christmas holiday. You got away from work.
Alltså, det är ju lite skillnad på att vara en pappa och ta ett jullov.
I say that there's a big difference in being a father and taking a vacation.
Alla behöver en paus.
He says, everybody needs a break sometimes.
I just had the same thought that I wondered what he found on Ireland that made him want to continue to get away.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. But maybe he found something there that made him to continue to want to still disappear. Maybe he found something that that we couldn't give him.
20th of February, Dublin, Ireland.
I'm standing outside Trinity College, in the old library. I'm here to look at the books my father was talking about.
As far as I can remember, my father has always had a library. All the new homes we moved into, a room or the living room would be filled with white IKEA bookshelves. Before my mother died, I had lived in 5 different places, ranging from Australia to a small island in the Baltic Sea. We never spent more than 3 years in one place. Now, 8 years later, at the age of 22, I've still never spent more than 3 years in one place.
And you'll notice no commas, no periods, no... it's how they... Latin was all done in... The verb always came last.
So this is where my father was 6 years ago. When he arrived in Dublin, he went here. And he leaned over the glass mountains like the other people are doing here right now.
In my father's library, the novels were put in alphabetical order, the travel literature on 2 bookshelves, the historical books on another. When I was 11, I had an idea that I would read all the books from A to Z. I managed to get to C.
It has been calculated that the books of Kells in its original state used the skin of around 185 calves. Some leaves were disfigured by sizable holes created in the flaying of the pelt.
You had to be careful when reading his books. You were not allowed to have any grease on your fingers, and you were never allowed to fold pages so you knew where you were.
They're actually vacuum cleaning the books. And there's a note saying, silence, reading room, and...
As a child, I was promised that everything was possible, just as long as he wanted it badly enough.
It's probably 30 meters to the roof. And along the long hall, there are statues of men.
That promise means that you have to sacrifice things. I've done that, lost friends because of work, getting so absorbed that I forget them. The same way my father has done when pursuing his career. February 22nd. I take the train to Wexford from Dublin.
Can you describe him physically, you know, what height was he and so on?
In Wexford, my father stayed in a hostel called the Kirwan House.
He actually looks identical to me, but older
Right.
And, a little bit longer, but physically we actually look the same. The bike was Ferrari red. He probably had a couple of bags on the bike.
Yes.
A helmet. He had a yellow jacket, yellow wind jacket. Does anything ring a bell?
Yellow jacket, maybe. I do recall meeting a lot of people from Europe that year. You know, Holland, Sweden. I'm just trying to place him. You know, there was an older man, quite an old man. He's nearly 90 now, working here at the time, just during the day, meeting people. And he's still living in Wexford. His name is Eamon. So I don't know... Well, I don't know what his memory will be like now or if he could remember anything.
Could we have, like, phone him or something?
His house is it's about 2 streets over from here.
Looking for Eamon, I pass one of the many churches I've seen in town. Next to it, on a parking space, Jesus is hanging on his cross in between all the cars. Something that I have never seen in Sweden. so I take a couple of pictures.
Have you been in Ireland very long?
No, this is the first time I'm here, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you, I don't know what a Swedish radio would be like in Orbit.
Eamon has got three radios on when I enter his house. He turns them off one by one. So how long have you lived in Wexford?
Oh, it's been about, say about 10 years, often. I'm not exactly sure, but originally from around Drogheda. I just thought I'd like this area better because the climate is better, for one thing.
Why were you at the Kirwanas?
Oh, me? Well, when I first came to Wexford, I was looking for a place to stay, and I just went there and rented a bed, you know, and stayed there a couple of weeks. And then I had several languages, you know, I have Spanish and French and a little bit of German. And so, and then when the owner came back, he asked me if I'd like a job, and I said I would. And so many different people came through the hostel, and sometimes I'd become quite friendly with some of them, and we'd have a cup of tea out at the table, and you know, we'd talk and all. And after a while, you'd almost consider them friends. And a couple of years later, you would have completely forgotten them, you know. And it's unfortunate that we don't remember better, but see, have a look at you and see if you remember. And he was traveling on his own, right? He would, You know, at the moment, I can't place him.
But was there a lot of lonely people traveling?
Well, when you say lonely, now, do you mean people who are traveling alone on their own, or people who were simply didn't have any friends or found it hard to make friends? Because I would say lonely people would be largely people who, you know, weren't able to relate to other people. But lone, if it's just lone, just traveling on their own, traveling alone, well, there would be a lot of them, yeah. You haven't heard from him at all, right?
Well, yeah, I have. Oh. He lives on New Zealand now.
Oh, yeah, okay, well, that's good. Yeah, I've heard it's a wonderful country, you know. Is he an adventurous fellow, or it may just be for the adventure of it, you know?
Yeah, he is actually adventurous. Yes. He likes climbing mountains. He likes biking.
Oh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. But do you have brothers and sisters or not?
Yeah, I have a little sister and a big brother.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, he did have a family. It is kind of surprising that he would just go out on his own.
Have you ever gone on alone like that on a trip?
No, I don't think I have, really. You know, I haven't done any biking to speak of, you know. When I was younger, I'd bike around the house, you know, around the neighborhood. But I haven't taken any from one town to another. I haven't done that.
February 23rd, the day after I leave for Waterford to continue on for Dunmore East. As I sit and watch the same landscape that my father passed by, it feels like I'm rushing after him. He travelled here on a bike at a much slower speed. I can't see much through the window. I can't even smell the landscape, just the air condition from the bus. Dennis?
Are you looking for Dennis?
Yeah,
Dennis. Skipper. Here, Dennis.
Dunmore East. From the pier, through the rain, you can see the hook. Dennis Harding is changing the cables, which he uses for the nets. 500 meters of cable go on the boat. They last for about 15 months, and then they put on new ones. He's three Lithuanian fishermen that work on the boat, are watching the cable as it goes on board, making sure that nothing goes wrong.
There's very few Irish fishermen anymore now. Well, in this port anyway, they want... most of them went on the buildings. They can earn as much on the buildings as they can fishing and they have more time off, so...
What do you think about that?
Well, I still like the job, but a lot of people probably don't. We have to put in a lot of hours, you know, and a lot of hardship. We're away from home a lot, so...
How long are you away for?
We're at sea for 10 or 11 days, non-stop.
How is it to leave your family that long?
Well, when you're younger, it doesn't seem to be as bad, I don't know, but as you get a bit older, then we seem to be... We don't seem to want to do it as much, but we keep in touch. We have we have radios in the house and that, and we keep in touch constantly. You know, we have a laptop, a computer there that we can send emails, and so it's a little bit okay that way.
It's like a little bit. There's.
Would you come down tomorrow for your money?
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Tomorrow?
No, it would be 4 o'clock.
4?
Yeah. You stay in bed tomorrow. Stay beside your wife, all right?
Will you ring me? Okay.
I'll ring you, yeah. Okay, nurse.
See you.
Okay, Alexander. Goodbye.
How come they're all from Litauen?
Lithuania. Well, they seem... There's a lot of Eastern Europeans coming to Ireland to work. The money is good compared with their money, so... It pays them to come here to work. Their wages would be about £500 a month at home, you know.
But what do you actually think about when you're out on the boat like that?
Think about the catch we're going to get. All sorts of things go through your head. How are they at home? Is everybody okay? And, you know, a lot of things go through your mind. But they must feel it as well. They're leaving their loved ones at home for 3 months. I only do it for 5 days, 6 days. When they go home to Lithuania and they leave to come back here, it must be very sad to say I'll be away for 3 months. But we would always think about the people at home, how they're thinking of us, and try to get word into them that we're okay and everything is good, and mostly of what's going to come in the catch, you know. That we're making money, that we're not wasting our time out here. You really get excited when you see a lot of fish or a lot of prawns. That gives you a great buzz.
How long do you think you'll continue fishing?
I don't know, I'm 64 years of age now, so another 30 years probably. I don't know. Hopefully I'll get another 5 years. You see, you think 5 years is a small amount of time, but when you're 64 years of age, Maybe I won't be able to do it in 5 years' time. I don't know. I keep going till I think I have to stop. Then I stop.
But how does it feel to... I noticed you had a memorial wall.
Oh, yeah. That's for all people lost at sea. When you see a lot of the names of some of the fishermen that you fished beside and you knew, it always say a little prayer, you know, when you pass.
Dennis is driving me back into Waterford, where I'm staying for the night. All the buses have stopped, and it's dark outside.
You see the hook flashing there now? You see the light? That's a landmark there now. When we see that, we're home. And when we see it going out, we have another 5 days to do.
February 24th. Walking the day after in Castletown Beer, I find to my surprise the same McCarty's bar that was on the cover of the book I borrowed in Sweden. The author of the book claimed this to be one of the best pubs in the world. Half of it is a pub, the other half a store.
Yeah.
I'm meeting another dentist here. The owner of a bed and breakfast is going to take me out to Dersey Island tomorrow.
But you actually met McCarthy, didn't you?
Yes. He stayed with me in our guest house. Once. But from reading his book, he showed really, you know, if I was to explain those people, and I know them along, you know, over many years, and he's quick just meeting them, he could describe them more so than I could, and I'd know those people over a long number of years. So I think he was very sharp. Well, he developed cancer, and he's deceased now just over 2.5 years.
My father was in this pub and bought supplies before going on to Dersey Island. He probably didn't meet Dennis, a man whose story is similar to his.
30 years ago, I came here to Castan Bear. I came in through the fishing, and I met this person. It was at our sister's wedding, who married a chap who fished with me on the same boat. She was the bridesmaid that day, so. And she had long hair, unusual long hair. You don't see many young girls today. It was 1.5 feet long, which was unusual. That was the first meeting.
How would you describe her?
She was very precise, and precise meaning clean. Everything had to be near perfect, a very kind of perfect person. To me, I know if she could come back today, she would take me around by the ear and say, you know, look at this, look at that. Very. That's what that was one of the things I didn't have, and I admired in her so much. 5 years left to last October, it was detected she had cancer. And she got a year and a half through her illness, and she passed away 4 years for this March. She's buried in her home graveyard, which would be in Cahermore, which would be a part of where the Dersey people would be buried. So that was her wish, to go back there. Her mother is buried and father are buried in the same graveyard. She was proud of it, very proud of Dersey, being a person from Dersey.
How did your children react?
Well, I suppose it was only a month before she did pass away that I had to sit them down one night and tell them, without she being in the presence, because she could not tell them. It was a hard moment, but I had to tell them. I don't know, as a father, you try to protect your children as much as you could, like, you know. So, but then again, she was their mother. You can't replace that, you know. But it took a long time, you know. But children, for them, they're going to go on. They're going to go into college and meet someone or whatever. But your mother, yes, you miss her. But as a husband and wife, you know, it's a loss that you'll never go away from me.
But don't you ever feel like running away?
Well, I suppose I know I'm woods at times, but you know your responsibilities. If you, on the day they're born, I suppose on the day you die, they'll still be your children. And they, you know, you'll try to do the best for what you can do for them. Times, yes, you would love to run away. I suppose in every job, if you're in it, you know, there's often you say, you know, I'd love to be out of here. But like, not everyone had that choice.
Later that night, borrowing a copy of the book from Dennis, I find myself laughing at all the jokes, realizing suddenly that the man is dead, though he's still alive on the page. I fall asleep wondering if he knew that he was going to die when writing the book, if the cancer had shown any sign of eating him alive, just as it did to Dennis' wife and my mother.
See that island where you see a little rock sticking up? There was an old lighthouse on that. And it was around 1830 that it was blown down. And the lightkeepers were marooned on it. This is the chap who will put you across now. See about, he must be down below.
Hello, how are you?
Thank you.
Do you want to go in now?
Yeah.
All right.
Do you know if there's anybody on the island now?
Very few. There's one man there in the first village, but maybe he will speak to you, maybe not. But see how it goes.
Yeah, thanks.
The cable car rocks back and forth, swaying 50 meters over the ocean, and I find a prayer on the wall.
Read every day for protection. Whoever goes to the Lord for safety, whoever remains under the protection of the Almighty, you can say to him, "You are my defender and protector. You are my God, and you I trust. He will keep you safe from all hidden dangers and from all deadly diseases. 1,000 may fall be dead beside you, 10,000 all around you, but you will not be harmed." What are you doing here?
Me?
Yeah.
I am farming.
You're farming here?
Yeah.
Are you born here in Dorsey?
I was born in Dorsey, 55. And I went to school here in Dorsey. That's the school up there in the mountain, look.
Ah. Oh. So how was it to go in school in Dorsey Island?
Oh, there were a big population here in Dorsey Island. There must be about 60 there. In the island at that time.
How many are there now?
I suppose there's 6 or 7 full-time now.
What's happened since then?
Well, if the old people died and the young people went off to... They got married and they stayed in the mainland.
So how do you think that why the 7 people still living here were they... Permanently? Why are they staying?
Well, I suppose they have no other where to move into their home, and they're quite happy there. Yeah. Where you were born and reared, I suppose, is your home, and they're very happy there and at the moment.
So, do you think that in the end nobody will live here?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. My sister built a house down the road there.
She did?
Yeah. There.
The little yellow one?
Yeah, the yellow one, yeah.
Would you recommend somewhere I should... What I should see or where I should go?
You should... If you go out to the far... If you walk out to the inn there, you'll see the... And you'll see the bull rock and the cow rock and the calf rock. If you stay on the road, you'll see them.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's really funny to be here because father, he travelled alone after my mother had died.
Yeah.
So he walked across to the tip of the island and then he walked back, then he went back to Sweden. So it's been a long journey, actually.
It is a long journey, yeah. Yeah, well, you should do the same today.
You think so?
Yeah, follow your father's footsteps.
It takes me 40 minutes to walk to the end of the island. I pass ruins of abandoned houses and three deserted villages.
This is the tip of Jersey Island. This is where my father... This was his turning point. You do actually get a feeling of wanting to continue on. You get a feeling of wanting to throw yourself in the ocean. Hej pappa, det är Martin. Du, jag ville bara säga att jag är på Jersey Isle och tittar ut över havet.
Hi dad, it's Martin. I'm standing on Jersey Island and I'm looking over the ocean.
Jag saknar dig. Hoppas allt är bra. Hej.
I miss you. Hope you're well.
My Father Takes a Vacation was produced by Martin Janssen for Documentary on One from RTE in Ireland. It was adapted for Swedish radio, where it won the prestigious Prietalia Award in 2008. Martin, now a father himself, lives in Stockholm. His father is still living in New Zealand. You've been listening to ReSound from the Third Coast International Audio Festival in Chicago. I'm Gwen Maxey. The program is produced by Dennis Funk and curated by Johanna Zorn and Sarah Geis of the Third Coast Festival. Support for ReSound comes from Emma, a web-based email marketing and communication service helping businesses and nonprofits manage their email campaigns and online surveys in style. More at myemma.com. The Third Coast International Audio Festival is a nonprofit arts organization made possible with lead funding from the Richard H. Driehaus Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Additional support is provided by the Agadino Foundation, the Menaki Foundation, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Special thanks to our many individual contributors from Chicago and around the world. The Third Coast Festival, now an independent arts organization, was originally founded at WBEZ Chicago. ReSound returns next week with more radio that you can't hear anywhere else unless you live everywhere else.
You've been listening to the Third Coast Podcast. If you like what you heard today, leave us a review on iTunes, send us an email, or let us know through Facebook or Twitter. You can also support us with a donation at thirdcoastfestival.org. As always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.